Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome along to the Keith Andrews Show. With me this week is Mr. Joe Malloy. Back from the Ryder Cup. I was very jealous. How was it?
Yeah, it was great. Really, really good.
Good weekend. Yeah. You and Nathan?
Well, that was less good, me and Nathan. The Ryder Cup was good.
Sunday, I had it all just ready. A couple of bottles of red. Nice dinner.
Starts at midday.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't on it then, but I was just thinking, oh, this is going to be epic.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of an anticlimax.
It was a bit flat. But you can't say it wasn't. It was a bit flat. There was maybe half an hour, 45 minutes where maybe.
Might have something.
Maybe. But even then, you knew deep down it's not going to happen. So it was a bit flat. The press conference and all the fallout since is pretty dramatic, though.
Yeah. Was the atmosphere, though, on the Friday afternoon and Saturday amazing?
Electric. Yeah, no, it was very good. Do you know what was interesting, actually? The atmosphere at the first tee, I'm sure you saw, the 6,000 stand. On the Sunday, it was much better because they just left the fans to it.
Right.
And a natural atmosphere sort of built and developed, and fans started singing it from one stand to another, and they started chanting to the fans who were at the first green from the first tee, shouting to each other back and forth, and it was great and really, really worked. Funny enough, on the Friday, the first day, so it's like 7 in the morning, 6 in the morning, everyone's there beforehand, they had like, and I can see why they thought to do it, they were like, we've got to warm up the crowd.
Yeah.
So they had basically a nightclub going.
Did they?
Oh, like music blaring, some French dude screaming at us every 10 seconds.
It wasn't Ginola, was it?
No, he did the opening ceremony. Quite well, to be fair. But so there's some dude screaming, can everybody cheer? All right, this is the 20th time he's asked, but yeah, way. And so funny enough, when it got to the time where they had to tee off, they shut off the music.
Right.
It suddenly felt very quiet.
Flat.
Yeah, kind of. Mm. Everyone's a bit wrecked from this lad. But on the whole, the course was fantastic. Loads of like vantage points to...
Tough course from your perspective.
Yeah, very tough. Lots of water, narrow. Lots of tough shots. Narrow, yeah, very narrow. Especially the way Thomas Bjorn had it set up. And but if you were there as a spectator, loads of great vantage
was
points
that?
To look down. Yeah,
so it was well set up.
Really well set up. Yeah. Made for this kind of thing. Okay. Stadium golf, I guess.
Quality. I was jealous. I have to say I was pretty jealous.
Just remember I was with Nathan Murphy the whole time.
Yeah, well, that is the caveat that we'll just balance it up with.
It's an asterisk.
Right, the Ireland squad's been announced. Yeah. Good timing. Martin O'Neill has been in. He's chatted away. We'll hear from him in a little bit. Big call, I suppose, is Harry Arthur coming back into the squad. Peacekeeping mission from Roy Keane all the way to Cardiff, I doubt. I think it was a phone call. So that's been kind of papered over to a degree. Look, we're light. There's no getting away from it from that in terms of that squad in certain areas. We're missing some key players. Seamus Coleman being a prime example. Stephen Ward is nursing an injury. I think there might have been a bit of furore about why he might have been left out of this squad, but I think he is nursing a slight knee injury that he took a bit of time in the summer to try and look after as well.
Okay, because the conspiracy theorists will look at Stephen Ward and say, no, but you're I don't know if you've talked to him or whatever, but your general
sense
is... Yeah, I've
spoken to him and he's got a slight knee concern that he has had to manage for quite some time, so he's looking after that. He's been a little bit in and out of the team up Burnley lately as well, I suppose.
Walters is out as well, obviously. He's on the show later on, as is James McCarthy. I was a bit surprised Robbie Brady wasn't rushed back.
I wasn't, really. No. 9-10 months, I thought it would have been, if you're a Burnley manager, fan, medical team, you're thinking, no.
Yeah.
Tried to come back during pre-season, broke down a little bit with a little niggly injury, which we see time and time again, trying to get back up to speed. And I think he was due to play a game on Monday or Tuesday and wasn't in that. Now, some people would have been thinking, oh, well, that's because he's earmarked for the first team, maybe 20 minutes, half an hour.
Mm.
But just read in the last half an hour, Sean Dyche said he's picked up another little...
Okay.
Another knock. But even if he had got through another 23, risky. Very risky, but that's where we are. We need him.
Yeah, for sure.
Anything else stick out to you there?
No, just I suppose, I mean, up front as ever looks as thin as ever. We're looking at Shane Long really to perform miracles.
Yeah, and Shane Long's had a couple of injury doubts over the last weekend. He missed the game against, I can't remember who they played, Southampton, but he has a toe injury. So whether he'll play this weekend, they're not quite sure.
Yeah. The only other thing that sticks out, obviously, is no Seamus Coleman, and therefore we're back to Cyrus Christie. Versus your favourite player in the world right now. And how's that going to play out? Will Matt Doherty start or will Cyrus Christie start? That's one I guess we can talk about later. But that feel, you know, who stands in for Coleman is always going to be an issue for an Irish team.
Yeah, I agree. There's different dynamics in that squad where he's going to have to come up with a system that the way we're going to try and get points out of these two games. One man who is in the squad is joining us on the line is Alan Judge. Alan, thanks for joining us.
How are you, lads? Is all right?
Very well. Hey, we're very well. Net squad's just been announced. Give us the heads up a little bit on when you tend to find out. I know when I was playing, we used to find out a little bit earlier, but are you waiting by the phone, or is it the club informed a little bit earlier maybe than we're privy to?
Yeah, the club lets you know a day or two before the club receives an email, and then they just forward it on to you, and that's how we find out.
Nice to be back in the squad. I know you played last month, came on against Poland. I know injury-wise, it's been a frustrating time for you, but just good to be back involved, playing regularly at club level and obviously amassing a few more caps.
Yeah, definitely. On the injury front, I'm completely free. I'm feeling good. With the last international, it was good to get on against Poland. I was just lacking a bit of minutes, which, to be fair, is understandable. The lads have started really well here. So I'm just biding my time, and over the last few weeks I've featured a lot more and I've actually started a few games, which is good.
Yeah, you've had to be a little bit patient, haven't you? Because you've mentioned it there, the team started the season so well. Players in your position playing particularly well as well. So it's a case of just biding that time, waiting for the right opportunity. But last week, starting the game against Arsenal in the Cup, scoring a really good free kick. You started again on Tuesday. So minutes starting to clock up now, which you must be pleased with.
Yeah, it is, and confidence as well. Confidence is key. It's everything, isn't it? So, that goal against Arsenal done me the world of good. I've been feeling very good, and as I said, I've just been waiting my time. A lot of things change over 2 years. We play a different formation to when I got injured. I was usually a number 10. Now I've been asked to, when I do play as a winger, which is a little bit different for me. But I'm happy to do it, and as I said, I'll just bide my time, and when I get the chance, I feel like now I'm starting to get back to where I was before. Whereas last year I was probably rushing it a bit. Now I'm feeling good and I'm feeling physically very good.
Tell us a little bit about Brentford, because a lot of our viewers and listeners might not be fully aware of the fact that you're probably most fans in England's second favourite team with the style of play that you do try and play more often than not. You've got Leeds on Saturday, which we'll touch on in a little bit. But tell us a little bit about maybe the way it's changed under Dean Smith and the way that he sets the team up.
When I first came down here, I came down under Mark Warburton, and he sold to me the structure, the way they play football. And ever since Warbs was here, that's just continued on. The gaffer, Dean Smith, came in. He'd done the exact same thing. You know, we've tweaked a few things. We do maybe a little bit more high pressure. You know, the minute you lose the ball, you've got to hunt for it straight away. But, it's just, I think if you ever come watch a Brentford game, you go away thinking that was a good game to watch.
Yeah, well, the fans normally get their money's worth, don't they? The model of Brentford as well, which you're obviously very familiar with, you've been there a number of years, is the recruitment side of things based on formulas, the level that they go into, the detail that they go into on the recruitment level. And in the main, you would have to say it's worked. Then more often than not, players move on for big fees. And you, of course, would have been probably one of those players a couple of years ago before that unfortunate injury. A lot of talk about maybe moving to Newcastle.
Yeah, as I said, I've been here. I've seen players move on for big money. Listen, Matthew Brennan puts an unbelievable amount of money into the club, and for him to bring in players when they're maybe not as well known, and then sell them for the money that we do sell them for is unbelievable. I think once we get into the new stadium, I think that'll be a big difference for us as well with competing to other people.
Your manager, who has impressed me certainly with the way he's gone about things. Before, he was at your place, he was at Walsall on a stringent budget, overproduced, I felt. Now he's getting linked with the vacant Villa manager's job. How does that go on in the dressing room? I remember being in the dressing room, managers getting linked, and it was like little chats around the canteen or whatever. He would be a big loss, wouldn't he?
He would be, as I said. Plays the football people want to see. He's approachable. He's easy to talk to. So, you see the links this morning around here as if nothing's happening. It's just really getting on with it, and it's just the way the gaffer is, really. You know, he has a joke and a laugh with the players, and there you go. You just go out and do your job.
What would you say his qualities are, Alan, in terms of, I know you spoke about the style of it, but man management, for instance. I used to very much respect the manager who, like you at the start of this season, maybe you're coming on or you're not getting on, those frustrating times. What's he like in those type of scenarios with you?
yeah, he's been good. I think he trusts me. You know, I was good for him before I got injured, and you know, he knows I still have that in me, and I know I have it in me too. And I say, man management. He's close to the players, but he's not too close. You know what I mean? So, you know, you can have a laugh and a joke with him, but then when it comes down to the serious side, you know, you don't want to be on the wrong side either.
Alan, it's great to see you back playing well and feeling confident. That's maybe the key word that you use. And, you know, it's a very tough time last year. Can you give us a sense, what is it like as a professional footballer playing at this unbelievably high level when you don't have confidence? So when you're out there on a pitch and you know either your body's not right or you're not feeling good, what's that experience like for that 90 minutes?
Yeah, it's hard because you're thinking, can I do this? But the more you play, the more you do, you start seeing it now. Over the last two games, my numbers, I know everybody knows football's about stats now lately, and my numbers have been covering an awful lot of ground, and I'm definitely getting back to where I was before.
Right.
But as you say, about confidence is, you feel good yourself, but then you have people in the background here, oh, he didn't do what he used to do before he got injured. And even though you know that's not true, it's still, you know, it eats away at you a little bit. And then obviously you've got social media, all that kind of stuff. And to be honest, fans just want to see you do what you did before.
Yeah.
And I've been very lucky with the Brentford fans here. You know, they're all on my side. They know it takes a little bit of time. It just can't turn it on like a light switch. Realistically, I've been back 6-7 months from a two years out. And it's now where I'm feeling, right, I'm nearly there.
Right, okay.
And as I said, the goal against Arsenal, playing games, confidence is everything.
It's a really good question, though, that you ask. Fans just assume, just because, oh, he's been back training 3 months or he's played 8-10 games, it takes that little bit of time, first of all, to trust your body, I'd imagine, Alan, and then the second of all, to build up that confidence physically, mentally. It's not easy.
Well, even the reason I asked it, Alan, I don't know, did you see Michael Owen was on BT Sport a couple of weeks ago? It did the rounds on social media as well, just talking about being on the pitch and certain situations arise, and he knew, you know, God, 5 years ago, I know what I could do in this situation, and not being able to do it was kind of soul-destroying. I guess you probably had a taste of that on the comeback trail.
Oh, definitely. Like, there was games last year when the ball was coming to me and I was thinking, oh, I just want to get rid of it. I want to just make sure I get 1-2 touch, get the ball, make sure I give it to the right person and move on. But now I'm doing things again. I'm doing what I felt I was doing before. Mm. You know, I'm trying passes, I'm putting crosses in. You know, I'm looking for the ball constantly. And just, you got to build into it. It's hard to explain. As you said, Michael Owen spoke about it. You really don't know what goes through your head, because you feel good 1 minute and then you hear something from somebody and it kind of just puts you right back down to zero confidence.
Right.
So you kind of, you've got to be mentally strong, and I feel personally I have been, and I feel like I'm on the up now.
I hope you're not reading social media.
I know. No, I'll stay with
you. he's far too wise for that. Listen, before you go, I want to ask you about Saturday's game. You're coming up against Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds. The purists out there are going to be buzzing with this one, because it's on paper it should be a magnificent affair. What have you made of them this season?
Oh yeah, they've been very good. You know, they've been playing differently to what they did last year. I would say we both play similar. So I imagine if I don't play, I imagine this is going to be a hell of a game to watch on Saturday. You know, you've got two great footballing teams, and you've got teams who don't sit back, they go for it. So hopefully it'll be a win for us, but there'll be goals in the game.
Alan, I'm certainly looking forward to it. Thanks for taking the time, and good luck against Denmark and Wales, pal.
No problem, lads. Cheers. Thanks.
Cheers. Thank you.
It's interesting what you said about the confidence and the body and the trust in your body. And I read that Michael Owen quote, and I was he had to adapt his game, obviously.
Yeah. But he knew he wasn't as good.
Couldn't do it.
You know,
body could not do it.
He was talking about Gerrard or whoever he was playing with later on, or get the ball, I guess Newcastle more so. Midfield, and every, you know, for the first 4 or 5 years of his career, he's running in behind.
Shoulders, yeah.
And so he said, like, if I do that, I'm going to pull my hamstring, maybe tear it. So he said, I had to come short, centre halves delighted with life, come short, play it out to a winger, hope they can get down the line, and I have to run in and try and nick a goal. And he said, this is embarrassing, really, which is terrible, isn't it?
I remember playing, I've laughed about this to Robbie Brady since. I was coming back from a groin injury at Blackburn that I was the best part of 18 months out. Come back for a few games, not quite right. Couldn't get to the bottom of what it was. And I played a 23s game against Man United, and Robbie Brady was making his way in the game. And I've said this to him before, he was a cocky little so-and-so on the pitch, full of confidence. He ran rings around me, nutmegged me. And I was literally, I couldn't even get close enough to him to smash him.
Yeah.
That's how bad it was, because I was literally just, that sharpness just wasn't there in that midsection. And it was soul destroying.
Oh, I'd say that's a moment where you ask, should I retire?
Yeah. And I was only probably 29, 30 at the time. And it was just like, whew, it's the beginning of the end. Fortunately, I was able to get it back on track for a couple of years. That wasn't the beginning of the end, Joe. We're not going there. Right, the Ireland squad, as we said, been announced. Declan Rice, not in the squad, obviously. Bit of a story circulating that it's looking likely that he was going to declare for England, close to it. Emma Malone's been on Twitter. FAI sources are now saying that Sky are about to amend their story. Sky Sports had basically come out and said, Declan Rice has decided he wants to play for England in the future. But the FAI clearly seeing that it's a little bit premature, that one.
So the FAI are saying that Sky have got this wrong. They're going to amend
Sky
that.
Sky are going to amend the story. Okay. So there's still hope.
Well,
there's still hope.
It feels like we're postponing the inevitable at this stage, doesn't it?
I'm with you.
Yeah,
I'm with you. Let's see what Martin had to say anyway at today's press conference, and we'll have a chat off the back of it.
I've spoken to the family. I've spoken to Declan, and obviously want a little bit more time to make their minds up, and I'm comfortable with that.
Do you see it as a setback, but he hasn't chosen Ireland?
No, he hasn't chosen anyone yet.
He's still hopeful?
Yep.
What was the gist of the conversation that you had with him?
Oh, I think that would be, I think it'll be going into...
Is there anything that you can take in that conversation?
I'm hopeful.
And have you set a deadline for him?
Not at the moment.
When do you think it might be resolved?
I think that... I wouldn't want to be putting a deadline on it. Obviously, I would like some sort of resolution at some stage or another, because we've got games to play. But if he chooses us, I will be delighted, and I shan't worry too much about the deadline.
Just finding the deadline. Do you think he could have the sources before the end of the year?
Sorry?
Do you think he could have the sources before the end of the year?
I'd be hopeful about that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Harry Archer is back in the squad. How did that conclusion happen?
That's fine, you know. Roy and he have had a conversation, and Harry is pretty happy. He wants to be in the squad, and he wants to play, and he wants to put it behind him. And I think Roy does as well too.
Did Roy offer an apology?
I think it would. I think that Harry is pretty happy with the outcome. So, and he's back in the squad.
Now it's time to look ahead to the Friday.
Bit of bonus Sky Sports in there as well.
Decent. So, I suppose the big talking points coming in were obviously Arthur, were Royce. I didn't expect Declan Rice to be in it, in all honesty. I probably didn't expect Harry Arthur to be in it.
It does heighten the sense for me that the Welsh game was a competitive game. It was an important game. And this whole mess has been sorted out with a quick phone call. Might that have been done 2 months ago?
Considering it happened in June.
I don't see this as a big cause for massive celebration. Was this thing only sorted out because of the media storm that it created? Why was the phone call not made in July, August?
Well, I think it didn't happen then because of the fact that Harry Arthur probably didn't make his intentions clear until the squad announcement. So the management team probably weren't aware of his feelings all over the summer, where he was genuinely unhappy about what has happened.
Yeah.
Squad announced or pre-squad, touching in with players as normally happens. You heard Alan Judge saying about 2-3 days before the squad.
Yeah.
That's probably when it came to fruition, that he wasn't happy, didn't want to be considered for selection. But you're right, if it's a case of, look, we had a bit of a Barney, let's put this to one side, let's move on.
Yeah.
It would have helped maybe 6 weeks ago.
I would have thought so, yeah. It doesn't seem like this was a big summit where Roy had to go on bended knee in person and get this whole thing sorted out. Like, if it's a phone call...
Mm.
Maybe it could have been sorted out. But look,
I think it's important that he's in, because he's a player that's playing well at the moment in a team that's struggling. I haven't seen the last couple. Seen bits of the Burnley game on Sunday, but I was engrossed in your main sport, golf, and the Ryder Cup. So he's a player that's playing really well. And I've said this before, I don't know if you hear me say, he's playing in a style now at Cardiff that relates more to Ireland than Bournemouth does.
Yeah.
So he's getting used to... what he's going to have to do.
Yeah.
And he has been aggressive. He has been tenacious. He more often than not picks up yellow cards, sometimes a little bit naively. He has to get the brakes on a little bit at times. Mm. But for me, he goes straight into the team.
Does he, yeah?
Yeah, he does, yeah. I think it was up for debate before, but with certain players missing from that area, I don't think Jeff Hendrick is an absolute nailed-on starter anymore.
Amazing how that's fallen off, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and it disappoints me, and I'm sure it disappoints him. It's just he's going through one of these phases in his career that he has to get through. Mm. So now, at club level, Sean Dyche has gone back to a 4-4-2. He's been the one sacrificed because he was playing that advanced centre midfield, which I have to say I don't think is his best position.
Right.
But he has done it well at Burnley. But now he's probably been the one that's been sacrificed for that system.
What's the gist of your Irish team at this remove?
Well, goalkeeper takes care of itself.
Yeah.
It's who plays at right back. You mentioned before we spoke to Alan George, Cyrus Christie. We know he favours Moore. But I think Matt Doherty has to start with the way he's playing, or does he maybe elect to play him on the left side, which he did the season before last for Wolves very, very well. I just don't think he trusts him. Duffy will undoubtedly start. Seen him play at Man City last weekend.
Yeah.
I thought he actually played very, very well against what we know can be a ridiculously good City side with the movement that they have.
Yeah.
Time and time again, him and Lewis Dunk provide that last-ditch tackle, that little bit of Braveheart type defending. Who plays with him? Will it be Kieran Clark? I thought he was really poor last month against Wales. Yeah. Probably one of our poorer performers. I'm not going great at Newcastle, you'd have to suggest as well. So I think that place is up for grabs. Mm. The informed defender is probably Richard Keogh. Will he elect to play him? I thought he did well against Poland in the second game. Obviously not to the same intensity was at the game.
Yeah.
And then we don't know what system he's going to play.
Yeah. So I know, we're assuming it's four at the back here.
Yeah.
Which is an assumption.
Yeah. But there's a couple of good little call-ups that I think quite relevant. Richie Tell deserves his call-up. He had a good season last year at Rotherham. And he started this season well in a pivotal role at the heart of midfield. Didn't quite happen for him at Brighton when he first went there. But now he's starting to climb that ladder. League One, done, proved. Now he's into Championship football, which is going to be a test at Rotherham because their budget is literally, it's not on the floor, Joe, it's in the basement, what they can pay out. So good to see him playing well.
I'm going to see Rotherham away to Preston this month, so I'll report back to you.
Are you really?
Yeah.
How can we go on there?
Just a few friends going up.
Are you?
Yeah.
Someone, a Rotherham or a Preston fan? Or?
We're going to Manchester.
Right. Is that the nearest game that you can
Well, we said let's hop on a bus and go and see a game.
It's at Rotherham or Preston?
It's at Preston.
At Preston.
So it's close.
Kilbane sorting the tickets?
Maybe.
there's a bit of an Irish influence on both
sides,
isn't
there? Yeah. So we said we'd go along. So who else are you throwing in there then, quickly?
Harry Arthur starts. I think Sean Williams is most certainly in the equation. I think Alan Judge up to speed comes into it as well. O'Dowd, I think, definitely starts. James McLean starts.
Yeah.
But O'Dowd has really pushed himself into the mix in a more central role. Again, club-wise, a little bit frustrating for him in and out with the way Lee Johnson is alternating the positions that he plays, and he plays in a 4-4-2 on the wing, whereas I think I like him in that one sitting midfielder, two box-to-box type in our midfield. I thought he did very well against Poland. And up top, like it's injury concerns galore. Like Maguire's been named in the squad. He didn't feature for Preston on Tuesday evening against Villa. Wasn't on the squad. How close he is, how realistic it is for him to have a say in these two games, I'm not sure. Shane Long, we'd already mentioned, toe injury. Scott Hogan been well and truly out of the equation at Aston Villa. Aidan O'Brien, I thought, was fantastic last month against Poland. And Ronan Curtis deserves a massive mention because I think he has been excellent this year.
It's not scaring the life out of Denmark, is it?
No, but Eriksen's not on the squad.
Yeah, that's true.
Massive bonus. That'll level the playing field ever so slightly, I would suggest. But yeah, I want to just touch on quickly, I know I've gone through a few of those, but players to watch, Irish players that I think are excelling in England at the moment, really excelling. I think the number one has to be Matt Doherty, without a shadow of a doubt. Club-wise, nailing it in his team that's playing with real style. I think they'll cement themselves in mid-table, Premier League life, and then look to build on that.
What do you think? I know you wouldn't agree with it. What do you think is O'Neill's issue with Doherty? Why is he saying maybe my face doesn't fit?
Well, I think there's been a slight contradiction in the messages that have been given to him.
Well, initially it was his defensive work.
And I think he was right. Last season, he didn't have to do as much defending as you would normally have to do because they were that dominant.
Yeah, of course.
So going into this season, and I've spoken to Matt Doherty about this, his positioning, where he positioned himself, ball on the far side, how much he tucks in, his awareness of balls getting slid down the side of him. It was going to be a different dynamic for Wolves this year, having to play as a back five, not just him as a... Like, he played like a winger at times last year. They were that dominant. So I agree, and I think he's aware of that, and he's improved on that. But then last month, Martin's coming out and saying it's the attacking side of it. He needs to be a little bit more like Cyrus and Seamus. Well, he's not like that. He's different to them. I think I'd put him in the middle in terms of the attributes that they have. He's very competent on the ball, picking passes, giving little one-twos, creating, and he fits into a system at Wolves so well.
And no disrespect to Cyrus Christie, who has lots of attributes, he's not good on the ball. There's always a worry over Christie with the ball being fizzed out to him or Christie on the ball, technically. Well, and his delivery isn't great either.
Well, I watched Cyrus at Man City a couple of weeks ago when Fulham played there. Mm. And you're right, that transition to attack, bang, covers 40, 50 yards so well.
Yeah.
When City penned them in into their own defensive third and Cyrus was having to play out of danger, it was a bit of an issue because City, as we know, press aggressively.
Yeah.
Matt Fulham liked to play out from the back, too risky in my opinion against a team like that, and it wasn't really happening. So yeah, I think now Matt Doherty is ahead of Cyrus Christie, but Martin likes Cyrus Christie, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with that one.
So he's your number one performing Irish player?
Yeah.
Okay, who's number two?
Darren Randolph.
18 sheets.
He's getting serious protection from Tony Pulis.
Yeah.
If there was ever a manager you wanted to work for,
if you sign for Tony Pulis, make sure you have a clean sheet bonus.
The protection he's getting is phenomenal.
Yeah,
like literally phenomenal. They're so well drilled. It's all they do all week long. Defensive shape drilled into them. Yeah. Difficult team to play against, even from set pieces. I don't even think he's having to come for that much because they must have 7 or 8 6-foot plus players. So he's up there.
Okay. Number three.
Enda Stevens, been flying for the best part of not just last season at Sheffield United, where they took the league by storm. The season before that at Portsmouth, magnificent that league won. So we're talking about Richie Tell taking the tears, nailing it. Enda Stevens, the exact same. Another good advert for League of Ireland football and what can be achieved.
Mm.
Marauding left back, though he came on last month against Poland, done quite well.
Yeah.
I think he comes into the recognition. And Sheffield United are flying level at the top of the league with Leeds and Borough. So he is flying.
Okay.
Next, Ronan Curtis, who we alluded to at Portsmouth. Again, ex-League of Ireland player, looking to make his way in the English game after his move from Derry.
Yeah.
6 goals, 10 games, top of the league, flying. Deserves to be in the squad. And people say, but he's playing in League One.
Yeah.
He could play in a Championship team.
Could he? Okay. 6 goals in 10 games is very impressive, even at League One. Does he look like the type of player, because some players do and some players don't, who can translate that to international level and nick a goal?
Big ask.
It's a huge ask.
Big ask, yeah, it is. And Portsmouth have been very impressive in how they've approached the league. And look, obviously the oppositions are going to be far inferior, but he cannot do any more than he's done so far. So he's putting himself into the right area, right position.
So to be fair, this list is not who are the best 5 Irish players. This is who's in
performing
great form,
well,
who's doing
right
really
now.
Well. Yeah, okay. Who's number 5 for you?
Well, I put two together, really. Ryan Manning and Richie Tell. And I was torn between Shane Duffy as well, because I do think Shane Duffy's doing well. But Ryan Manning and Richie Tell as a two, both at Rotherham, who you're going to see in the next couple of weeks. Manning, a couple of penalties, probably give him a few headlines after his long move from QPR. And Richie Tell, I've already spoke about, doing really, really well.
I'm a big fan of Tell. I was actually surprised it didn't go better for him even when he first got over there.
Yeah, it was difficult because Chris Hughton doesn't particularly like to change his team.
Yeah.
They were playing in a 4-4-2 and they had good central midfielders. Hard to gatecrash that.
Yeah.
Came back the start of last season and he did too much during the close season, like fitness work. So he came back, probably already having done a pre-season, and then went into a pre-season. Such was his eagerness and to succeed.
Yeah.
And he broke down. So he had to be patient again. It was a tough time for him.
Mm.
So he has gone through those battles. He has shown real resilience, to make it in England.
Yeah, it's great, because there would have been a temptation, come back and be a big fish in Ireland again.
Back to Dundalk, arm around the shoulder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, fair play to him, it's great.
So, and the other thing as well, with Rotherham, it's going to be a battle. Every single week for them is going to be a battle. Mm. Home form is going to be crucial. But the way he's gone about it, and if you think back to the way he was at Dundalk, a marauding, Rioter Rovers type.
Goal scoring. Yeah.
Free kicks, diagonals. He's evolved his game and he plays a very responsible role within the team.
Right, okay.
So he sits behind the ball, he digs in, he tracks runners. It's not just about, I'm not saying that's all he did at Dundalk, but
sure. That
was the eye-catching kind of balls and goals that got him the move.
Well, a bit like Matt Doherty, Dundalk were very dominant. So,
yeah, you know. Exactly. So
very good. They're your top five at the moment?
Top five at the moment, playing well. Some of them will come into the reckoning, obviously. Some of them will start, certainly Darren Randolph. Who starts up front is going to be a tricky one. How many will he go for? If Shane Long's fit, he starts. I don't think that's a question. Will he play a 4-4-2 and play James McLean?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you like McLean off him?
No, I prefer James on the left. I think what he gives you, with all the endeavour and the intensity and setting the tone, sometimes it can be picked off a little bit if the opposition, which Wales did in Cardiff certainly, are brave enough and they drop deep and make the pitch as wide as possible. Very hard for them to do that when they were playing so confidently. I think we'll go with a 4-5-1 of some description and look to go about it in that way. But I certainly prefer James McLean on the left-hand side. But no matter where he plays, like even his desire to get back in, he played the other night. I've seen him with some big cast on his arm, set up the goal for Thomas Ince. He's a vital player for us, isn't he?
There's no doubt. Top scorer in the last campaign, and we need more goals again.
Well, one man who we would have liked to have called upon has joined us on the line is John Walters. Johnny, thanks for joining us.
No props.
How are you, pal? I know it's been a tough couple of weeks with the injury. Give us a little update.
Bad. Yeah, not too bad. Just part and parcel, isn't it? I think these things happen, and rather than be down about it, you just got to get on with it.
So paint us the picture, because I remember the day you got injured, your manager did an interview after the game and he basically said, hadn't seen John yet, not sure if it's an ankle, Achilles, might have been a bit of a risk to play him, but we consulted the day before and we were both happy to go with it. But was there a slight risk? Or give us a little bit of the background of it.
Now, look, in the week before, I just wasn't jumping off right and things, and I didn't train at the beginning of the week, and I went to see a guy in London, the main guy to do with them, the main specialist to do with them, and he says, look, yeah, fine, there's no risk sort of thing to go on it. Going off all the scans and everything, how I felt, Achilles is in pristine condition, so I felt good. And then the next day I was doing heavy weights on it, and I was just going to see how it reacted. It was fine. I trained Friday, all good. But because he only trained Friday and didn't train in the week, and we had a three-game week coming up, the manager said, look, just take it easy. I'm not going to start. I just don't want to risk you for next week. You've got three games coming off, and I just need you to be 100%. You haven't trained all week, and that's how he does things. Similar to Burnley, if you don't train, so you're not going to be right off, and he didn't want to risk it. I was like, no problem whatsoever. And he said, I'll only put you on if you need you. And that was the case. I went on, and I think I passed the ball to the referee once. I thought the referee was one of our players, and I ended up chasing back 80 yards. And I felt good, chased back, did a couple of lengths of the pitch, and then 2 minutes later, I did a 1-2 with someone. And then it was like there was a sniper at the top of the stadium, and it was just like someone just shot the back of my leg. I thought I got kicked, first of all, in that split second, and then I realised no one was around me, and I knew straight away, I knew it was my Achilles.
You've had such a frustrating time, haven't you? Last year, obviously, and we went over to see us last year, and it was all a case of get a good pre. The games at the end of the season, the Irish games, I think, helped you, and it gave you a little bit of mojo as well, and work well over the summer, come back, good pre-season, and maybe the Europa League campaign didn't quite help you in terms of whether you knew you were going to be staying, going, all the rest of it. But then you made the decision as well, which everyone was delighted about, that you were going to keep on playing for Ireland. And then for this to happen, it's just a kick in the balls, isn't it?
No. Yeah, that's what, exactly. Towards the end of last year, I was fit. I was fit from March on, was in play. Had the Irish games in the summer. Didn't take many days off in the summer. I was at home working really hard. Went back into pre-season, felt really good. Didn't miss a day's training, did everything all the way through. Felt really good. And had a lot of off-field things going on at the time. I won't go into it, but I've had a lot of things off the pitch that were quite tough to deal with. And probably the hardest thing to do was to go on loan to Ipswich. That was nowhere near my house, and leave my family at home. And but I thought it's important that I needed to play.
Was it just did that feel like the right move? Because I was surprised that you were going to go. I know there was maybe nostalgic reasons as well, because you'd had a really successful period there before, or was it meeting the manager? But geographically, as you've alluded to, certainly didn't suit your family life, did it?
No, look, it wasn't an easy decision, because there was clubs that were very close to me that wanted to take me. But you know what it's like, there's a lot of people spinning plates. Mm. It's the same for clubs and players. Yeah, I'm interested. Yeah, I'm interested in you, and you're a number one target, and then nothing happens for a week, and then you think, oh, what's happening here? And then they do that to a few players until suddenly they get one, and then you're left in the lurch. What happened at Ipswich, the owner rang me. The owner rang me, and that made my mind up. It was Marcus Evans rang me and said, look, we really want to get you in. And that made my mind up. And once it was from that, I was like, right, OK, let's go and play some games and see where it takes me. And then, obviously, 2 weeks in, this happens, and a disaster. But I think I alluded to the fact that there's a lot of people worse off than me. And in the grand scheme of things, it's not a major thing. It is what it is. And you just take how it is. And look, it's a long time out, and I'll do everything I can to get back to where I was at. It's a long time out, but there's a lot of people worse off than I am. And that's how I deal with it.
Yeah, it's probably the way to look at it. It's interesting you talk about stress can sometimes contribute to a player's injuries. It's amazing how often that seems to happen. What's the prognosis, John? Was it completely ruptured? Do you have a timeline, or are they wary of putting a timeline on it just yet?
No, it was. It's very rare what I've done, where I've done it. It's a lateral part of the meniscus. It's a rupture of the lateral part. It's not low down either. It's going into the musculotendinous junction. It's just underneath that. A bit technical, but it's not normally the part that goes. If you do your Achilles, the first part will be the inside part. It's just the way that your calf goes into your Achilles and everything. And it's rare. So when they went to see the surgeon in London, he said, look, it tends not to do well off an operation here with the scar tissue and what you're cutting into and the blood supply of the Achilles. So we'll do it conservatively. And I'm in a booth for the next 4 or 6 weeks with wedges in. I'm basically like wearing high heels in the booth, in the foot at that angle, so it can heal. I'm having injections in there to help heal. Realistically, on your Achilles, with there not being a good blood supply and how long it takes to heal, we originally said around a 6 month mark, and I don't think it'll be far off that.
Right. It's amazing, really. The Achilles is well and truly taken over the cruciate as the dreaded injury that every player wants to hear, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, use it for everything. The Achilles is all your spring or your bounce, and that's a big part of how I play and push off and do everything. So it's not great. I don't know, pitches are getting harder and harder nowadays, and I've seen it down the years. There is a pitch, I'm not going to go into which one, but I know 3 or 4 people have ruptured the Achilles on it. It's a very hard pitch. So I don't know whether that's got something to do with it as well. I don't know. It's not a great one, but it is what it is, as I said.
I'm like the Grim Reaper here, Johnny, but I'm going to bring you back to last month against Wales and Cardiff. And look, I've said since, it was the most difficult game I've ever had to commentate on, because first and foremost, I'm obviously still a fan, and I've been in that position. I've probably been in that position with you on a couple of games as well, where obviously nothing went for us. We weren't anywhere near it. How does that game sit with you now, a few weeks on?
That's still a sore point. That's still, as you said, I haven't played in many games like that where I felt that far as a team off it. Germany being one, Germany at home.
Yeah, being there, yeah.
And we, as players, you go out, right, we're going to press and we're going to do this, and then suddenly you don't, or a couple of players do, and it doesn't quite work, and then they're through you like knife through butter. It's that easy, and it was thinking. And sometimes you didn't have players up front; they had everyone in the they had a really good system of playing, and I was really impressed with how they played, but playing against it, it's, yeah, it was hard to take. It was embarrassing to play in, really, isn't it? If you're playing at night, it's an embarrassing feeling. And look, I remember the last time we were there, me and Shane were sitting next to each other in the crowd, and James was clean scored. And there was a fan behind me, and he was giving me a bit of stick before when we scored. Give him a little bit back, and that's all I could think of in my head after the game. Oh, I'm there or anything like that. And I was thinking, oh, God. But it was, it's such a bad feeling to play in. And it's the only good thing now, if you look at the Denmark game, I didn't play in that one either at home. And the next two games, Denmark, Wales, and the lads that are playing, you know what it's like in the back of your head. You're thinking, that can't happen again. Mm. That can't happen again how we were then. And we owed them one almost. And then you'd be doing everything you can. Not like you don't do it anyway during the game, but you do anything you can not to have that feeling again.
It's something which I'd say struck a lot of people watching, John. So, I mean, you talk about maybe there, the intention was to go out and press, you know, and we probably certainly feel that the Irish team are at their best when they press and get in opposition faces. Like Cardiff, I guess, in the 1-0 win.
Yeah.
So we're kind of watching, you know, on our couch, very comfortable, and we're looking at a 17-year-old looking like Pirlo out there. And I guess you're kind of wondering, why is nobody sitting on him, or why is nobody smashing him, you know, 10 minutes in? And you're saying it was hard to get to grips with what they're doing. Maybe you could explain that to us, because I guess he was sort of vaguely in your vicinity at times.
Yeah, look, it was myself and Callum. I don't know, sometimes there's new players in there, sometimes not to point the fingers at anyone, because I was part of the team as well, but sometimes you're not quite at it, or you don't quite know, and you're half a second off it, and that's all it takes, half a second to miss or not time you're pressing right, or if you go and then stop, then you're caught in no man's land and you're playing around so easy, and that just seems to happen so often. And then as an experienced one, I've played against formations like that before, pretty similar, where they want to play, but they want to get the second midfielder out that's on the opposite side of the pitch. So they do all the playing, they make you run around. Chelsea used to do it a few years ago, and they want to get the second one out on the other side of the pitch with the full-back pushed high on and the winger tucked in.
Yeah. So
they almost make a 3v2 against your left-back and the left midfielder almost. So as a striker, as you're playing as a two, you should, like I know this through experience, ignore them keeping the ball off the keeper, the centre half, go and stand on the second midfielder. That's the one they want to get out. And if you leave the centre half to bring it out, I know centre halves are better now on the ball, but if you leave centre half to bring it out, they're the ones that you want to bring it out and play it either straight past into the field or try and do a 50-yard diagonal and lose the ball.
Yeah.
So it was hard getting that across on the pitch. In a half time, we tried to say a bit more, but you know, when you're that many goals down, you're chasing it as well. You want to get something. Then in the end, you almost, no, don't come out, stay in your own half because you don't want to get beat by any more. It's embarrassing. No more goals. But then there's obviously people pay to come and watch you, so all the fans travel over. So you don't want to just be sitting in your half, and it's embarrassing to be doing that as well.
Johnny, there's no way of getting away from this. It's not a great time, or hasn't been a great time for us. Obviously, you mentioned the performance and the result against Denmark, going back to the qualifier, obviously the game in Cardiff last month, and then we had, unfortunately, your club teammate Stephen Ward's leaked WhatsApp, which painted a picture of maybe the relationship Roy, who's been under a lot of scrutiny in the last month or so. Where are we right now, and where are we with Roy in terms of him as the assistant manager? You know, it seems to have made up with Harry Arthur, which is good that he's back in the squad. But is it a bigger an issue as what's been made out?
As a team, where we're at, I think there's a lot of changes. There's a lot of new blood coming in, from years ago. Even players around the hotel that are not involved, and that's a hard position to be in. It's a lot, as you know, it's 25 plus man squad. So when the 11 that play and the ones that are not used to the same faces anyway, and it was a good group. So everyone, it was quite a tight knit group. Now there's a lot of new faces in, so that sometimes takes time to bed. That could be part of the issue. whether you're losing a bit of experience, a bit of quality, and there's players now who are just finding the way in the Championship as well. Some very good players, but some just finding the way in the next few years. Hopefully they'll come more to the fore. And then the other issue, which was Stephen Warden is not up. What's he doing? I don't know. I think he's. I feel for him because he's one of the nicest guys,
yeah.
Stephen, and he's obviously. His friends have asked him a few stories, obviously, and his friends have asked him probably what's happened, and he's probably said that's too long to tell you. I'll put a voice note in, and I think one of his friends somehow not stitched him up, but somehow got out, hasn't it? And it causes all sorts. Now, I'm not saying stuff like that doesn't go on at clubs. It's just sometimes it's a thing, as you know yourself, you don't see. And some people are different to others. I think everyone knows how Roy is as a player and how he's gone in after his playing day. So it's something that I know a part of anyway, but other people might not. So I can deal with it in my own way, and that's just part and parcel. And Martin's a manager, Roy's the assistant, and that's the way it is. You deal with what's there. I don't know how else I can.
Johnny, my issue, and I've been quite vocal with this, is, and I'm not privy to what goes on behind closed doors, but if it's a regular occurrence, people like you, I don't think it's a problem with, because you've been schooled in a way where you've served an apprenticeship, you've got broad shoulders in both senses of the world. But the younger generation, they're not used to that.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say. It's changing. Yeah. They're not used to. It's a different world. It's a different world completely. It's a different world of social media and everyone patting you on the back, or it can go the opposite way. And you know what you're going to say? It's different for the younger lads. I've never come across this before. They've gone through 18s, 23s at the academy. I think that in football's changing. I don't think you can. It's different to what it used to be like. And it's not so much. Like in the clubs the past few years at Stoke and Burnley, it's not like that. There's no real. I think that's going out of the changing room as players managing themselves as well. I'm becoming a bit of, I don't know how to put it. Yeah, but they're not used to it.
Yeah.
They're not used to that. But should they be? Is a question. Probably you asking. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, maybe they shouldn't be increasingly. You know. Like, Harry Arter clearly felt a line had been crossed. One of the lines which stuck out from, again, per Stephen Ward's WhatsApp message was that in France, OK, look, these things happen, and they seem to be happening a bit too often, but they happen. And you seem to say, well, come up to the room and we'll sort this out because it's causing tension in the squad. Let's talk it out. And that offer was fairly solidly declined. So you clearly felt this needs to be sorted out because it's causing a tension in the squad. It's not good for the squad.
That's what Stephen Ward said.
well, did you try and sort it out?
I don't want to go into it too much. In fact, sure. I don't want to cause any. Look, there's a big. We've got a massive. For the national team, we've got a massive week coming up. No doubt. No, it's big, no bones about it. Denmark beats comfortably. Wales beats comfortably. That's got to change in the next week. I don't want to cause any issues before that or anything, or give anything else to talk about apart from, you know, the lads that were in there, any distractions. And probably now's not the best time to go into it or to talk about it, but it's not really my thing to do that. And put my side of it across. Probably not the best time to do that.
I certainly respect that and understand it. So flip it on now. A week down the line, are we expecting that little bit of, we're going to show everybody against Denmark on this Saturday? Christian Eriksen hopefully will be missing. He's not been named in the squad. Whether he'll make it or not, they missed out on get for Spurs last night. What are you anticipating?
I'm hoping for a win, obviously, but it's going to be a tough game. But as I said, I didn't play in the last one. So I don't, like, obviously I played in the Wales one. If it was playing again, it'll be like, right, you're, that's not going to happen again. And that's what the mentality of the players have got to be. You know, it's going to be a difficult game because it's a good team. Mm. No, they went and beat, after Wales easily beat us in the last game, they went and comfortably beat Wales. I know a few of the Welsh camp, even at Burnley, there's an Irish guy, Ronan, who's the stats guy for Wales, and our chief scout, Hodgie, is in the Welsh camp as well. So they were comfortably beaten. So whether they saw the formation, how they played and countered that, I don't know. But look, it's going to be a difficult game. But I think we need for pride, really, to get the win, without a shadow of a doubt. Especially home and things like that, it needs to be a win. It needs to be better than what we have been.
Can I ask you before you go, Johnny, about, there's been a lot made in recent years about lack of goals in the team and since Robbie Keane's retirement, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
For me, then, it becomes even more important what you do as a team, how well you're set up, how you create chances as a team. It's not always about just that out-and-out goal scorer, but with the options we have, I don't really hear this, just chatting about James McLean just before you came on, about maybe him up front. I personally prefer him on the left-hand side. Where do you see us with the options that we have? Obviously, Longy's struggling with an injury at the moment. We've got Scott Hogg and Sean Maguire. And it probably goes back to the point you're making about these players just starting to make their way in the Championship. Yep. Graham Bourke, Aidan O'Brien, who I thought was magnificent against Poland. So there is promising signs there.
No, there is, but someone needs to really step up and come to the fore. Obviously, we've got Shane, who I really enjoy playing with Shane. I really get on with him. Really like him, but then Shawnee's had a few bad injuries, you know, with his hamstrings. He's come on back, and as you said, like the other boys, just coming through from the Championship and 7-4. I'm doing well, scoring goals, and Callum scored a few recently, and then Aidan against Poland, you know, saw the game on TV, and Doy did really well as well. So hopefully someone can step up to the forefront and really produce. But I've been in teams where no one runs away with top goal scorers, 9-10 goals a season, and it's a real team effort, and it's other parts of the team, and it might be a bit boring, but it's set pieces because they can decide games, but then it's being tough enough not to be broken down. And then it goes back to the Welsh game and the Denmark game, where we're too easily broken down, so it needs to be, you know, a base to work from. And I'm similar with you with James. I think from the left, I like him from the left because he's direct. He helps his fullback, which sometimes is unseen. But he gets, so against the better teams, which generally we're the underdogs, against the better teams, you need someone that's going to work the hole. But then he gets forward, he's good in the air, delivers across, and he's very direct. So I do prefer him from the left. But sometimes if you play out there for so long, then you throw it up front. Sometimes it's a bit of a one-off and you can produce. So, you know, hopefully, Shane will be fit, as I heard you before. I think if Shane's fit, he plays. I don't think he can argue with that at all.
John, another question from the cheap seats. One of the great complaints, obviously, is maybe we don't keep the ball at times or don't get on the ball and express ourselves. Give us your side of that. Like, are Martin and Roy insisting that we try and play from the back? Have we kind of accepted as a team maybe going a bit more direct suits us? Like, when we're watching Ireland, what should we be expecting to see on the ball? Like, what is the aim? What is the vision on a given week to do when Ireland get the ball, when a right back gets the ball, or the goalkeeper gets the ball?
You know, I know exactly where you come from. So playing in games, and you think, right, we're going to keep it. We're going to do this first 10 minutes. We're going to turn them so we create space, and then we're going to get on the ball. And then it seems like you work so hard to get the ball back, especially if you're playing as one of the forwards. You work so hard to get the ball back, and we do win it back. The old, everyone's really tired, so no one really shows for the ball. There's no real options. And I think we've got to get into our heads that it's not just working hard when you go back, win the ball back. You've got to work even harder to make angles for your friend, to help them out. Because the person on the ball needs at least two options, three options, four options. Because then when they do, they can pick the right option. But if you don't have any options and everyone's tired from working back, and you think, oh, the easy things to do is just to stand there and let the guy have the ball and put it long, and then you're just chasing the ball again.
Yeah.
So I've been in plenty of games like that, and I think that needs to change a bit. But going on, each manager's different. I've played under. I've had so many really good managers, every single manager is different.
A few bad ones as well.
Yeah, so you work on different things in training, or you'll play different things, and you know, Morton's had success down the years at the clubs he's been at, so you can't really argue with certain points of it, but I understand where you're coming from, and as a fan, where you see it like that, but sometimes it feels like that when you're playing as well.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's much easier looking on. Again, I appreciate you're not going to say anything you don't want to say here, so I'm comfortable asking you this. Harry Ard is back in the squad now. That's great. That's been sorted out with a phone call. Did you need a phone call to sort things out? Like, I mean, Keith's talking about how the game has changed and you kind of can stand up for yourself and you're experienced. And like, did you have to have clear the air talks for you to come back into the squad after the summer? Or how is it left? How are these things sorted out with you and, say, Roy in this instance? How is it sorted out?
No, I didn't have a phone call.
Were you looking for one?
I don't know Harry's situation. I don't know if he's had a phone call. I don't know. That's just, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Was he looking for one? No, I just get on with it. But was it? Did he have a sit down and chat and talk through? No, that's just where it is. I'm not. Whether that's me, I don't know. I just carried on, and I always want to play. I was very proud too. And nothing's going to stop me from turning up to do that. That's how I feel. So whatever happened, I wasn't going to let it stop me from going, no, I'm not going to not turn up because of that. So
I guess that's the experience. Because I sometimes wonder, you know, so say you're in an environment like that, you're there for weeks on end. You don't want that tension there either, because I mean, it's a constant thing. You go down for breakfast and you have to do a quick scan of the room.
You get
in the elevator. It's like, geez, he better not be. You know, if this door opens and it's you know who, then you don't want that, because that's an energy drainer for you across a week, I would presume.
You're right, and that's why it's important as a group of lads. It's a good group, because at that time you have as well. It's a long time away, and things happen when you're away. And between lads, you know, it's like on a camp. It's a long time, and it's very hard thing to say. It can be a very lonely place, and I'm very comfortable in my own space and things like that. But some lads might find it more difficult, but it is, and that's why it's important to have a tight knit group of lads. And down the years, we've tended to have that, as Keith will tell you.
Yeah.
Johnny, look, really, really appreciate you taking the time. You're going to be a massive loss, both on and off the pitch. Wish you well, your rehab.
No, cheers. Thank you.
Johnny.
No, enjoy coming on. Thanks very much.
Thanks, John.
Massive miss. And he mentioned, even during the game, as an experienced player, maybe he could have done this, maybe he looks in the mirror. But I don't think all players do that. And that's a generational
thing
that's happening within the game.
Yeah, he used the word embarrassing as well.
Between.
He used the word embarrassing, which is, you know, it's great.
It was. It's not rocket science saying that. You know, he mentioned we've been there a few times, a Germany result, but with all due respect, this is Wales, and this is Denmark, and he knows. And if he was in that squad, he'd be instilling it from the moment they meet up and the first training session, there would be an edge. And he would be right at the forefront of that. But unfortunately, he's not going to be part of it.
Yeah.
Right, we need to move on. Graeme Souness was talking Liverpool on Virgin Media Sport last night. Let's have a look.
Normally in a big game away from home against, you know, you're playing another good team, you know they're going to come after you. There'll be a 20 minutes, 25 minutes, 30 minutes maybe, and then the pace will drop. And I thought at half-time the pace would drop and Liverpool would start to get a bit more possession further up the field. The pace never dropped. I mean, they got after Liverpool from start to finish. And that's as ordinary as I've seen Liverpool play, certainly this year, and maybe a good bit of last year as well. They were made to look hurried in their passing, misplaced passes. The big players, some of the big players that were stars from last year, did nothing tonight.
Like,
the three front men showed nothing. No Firmino, no Mane, and no Salah.
Yeah, it was an off night for Liverpool, no doubt about it. I covered the game. I thought Napoli did a Liverpool. To Liverpool, the intensity levels they showed and stopped the opposition playing. Liverpool didn't really have an answer to it. Some magnificent performance from Napoli, but hopefully from Liverpool's perspective, just an off night.
Yeah, it's very acceptable to go there and not win or not even draw in the end. I was watching Spurs Barcelona, I'm afraid.
Would that be a preference? Yeah, because these are always the dynamics with the TV companies about the viewing figures, the best game. That Spurs Barcelona was a brilliant game.
I have no regrets. And Messi was just Messi. It's gorgeous.
Well, Virgin Media Sport is the new home of European football in Ireland, with more than 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games this season. Virgin Media Sport is exclusive to all Virgin Media TV customers, who can also download the TV Anywhere app and stream all the action whenever and wherever they like.
So look, Johnny Walters is off the line now.
Yeah.
He's clearly very cognizant of the fact that he knows that if him, Harry Arter and Roy speak about this in depth, it's a huge story for weeks on end. And maybe if he says what he really thinks, it sparks a massive controversy. Yes. He doesn't want to do that. It's a difficult position. But he said certain things. You know, he certainly hasn't denied it happened. Mm. And he certainly talked about the effect maybe it has on younger players, this kind of atmosphere.
But he shows class, doesn't he? He knows the team are meeting up the weekend.
Yeah.
He knows he can't impact it from the bench, from the pitch now, from the starting position. And he doesn't want to add petrol onto the flames.
But can I say, he didn't say everything great.
No.
He didn't say,
Joe, everything isn't great. Everything's
exactly,
far from great.
Exactly. So, I mean,
he is playing the responsible senior pro, as you would expect, as he has done for years. And even now, injured, he's not willing to do it. I have to say, he shows class. I would do the exact same, because I would want to give my teammates the best possible chance, mm-hmm. regardless of the relationship with the manager or the assistant manager. I do think he's got a good relationship with Martin.
Okay.
Obviously less so with Roy.
Yeah, he should be commended for coming on and not blowing the whole thing up again. But it is noticeable he didn't say, oh, this may have happened, but it rarely happens. It was a real kind of once in a blue moon kind of thing, and it's all fine, it's all great, we're a really happy camp. Mm. You know, he acknowledged the new faces make things difficult.
Yeah.
Like, you've got your gang and your tight-knit group, and suddenly that ebbs away and new lads come in. That takes a bit of time.
Mm.
And then he certainly didn't, you know, he said, do you know what Roy's like? He was like that as a player, he's like that now. So that's a bit of a continuation of what's been going on, though, but it's not good either. You know, it's not like you listen to that phone call and you think, oh, well, it was a one-off thing, everything's great. That's the
worry. I think we all know it's not great.
Yeah.
And John Walters, as much as he doesn't want to add petrol onto those flames, he's not going to come on and tell lies. He's not going to come on and protect someone who maybe he has got an antagonistic relationship with. So why would he? Why should he? But equally, he's been very, very respectful and thoughtful of his teammates going into crucial doubleheader, where I think undoubtedly the management team's future is at stake going into these two games.
You know the Wales situation he talks about, the midfield situation, something he says is commonplace. He saw Chelsea do it a few years ago. He spotted the pattern straight away. Would that strike you as an issue that should have been talked about during the week, or is that one of those things that is slightly unforeseeable, not least when it's Ryan Giggs' first competitive game?
Yeah, well, I think you've answered it there to a degree. In anticipating it, difficult. Flip between a three at the back and a four at the back in the warm-up games over the summer. Again, you can't read much into those, but you can certainly react during the game. You know, you look for that guidance from the sideline, and you know better than me, those areas in midfield, you get caught in grey areas. You've seen me at times with Glenn Whelan, not with the extra man in there, and you're chasing shadows. And then what happens, especially when you get more experience, if you can't affect the ball in front of you, you have to affect the ball going in behind you. So you have to screen the ball to the strikers as an absolute minimum, whereas that wasn't even happening. So there was knock-on effects everywhere. It was literally, you know, you hear, oh, we're half a yard short everywhere. Well, we weren't. We were 2 or 3 yards short in every department, weren't we, when we went to close down. It was in ones and twos. So it was a difficult night. And he hit the nail on the head. It was embarrassing. I didn't enjoy it. I said to him it was the worst game I had to commentate on.
It's good to get his perspective, because there might have been a sense looking on how hard are this team working. And he's kind of clarified the difficulties of it. I think you've Martin O'Neill.
Yeah, Martin O'Neill was chatting at the press conference. His doorstep by Jonas, and he was asked about Declan Rice.
This comes as a bit of a shocker, isn't it?
No. You standing out here with that there has become rather a shock, you know. And since you're not the best looking fella in the world, you know, I'd rather look at Tony to tell you the truth, you know.
Chris, that's when the last contact was with the family.
I think at the end of it all, I've been in there. I've gone through the
whole thing. No, it's just in context of the story that's coming out.
I know, but you want another context. And then by the time I get to the bottom of the road, there might be a change of plan, you know. So Young man, yeah, I think you should. You're in contact with your group. You should know.
Yeah, I knew nothing about it.
Did you not? No. Well, you didn't know anything about it.
No, I didn't know.
Oh, remarkable! And you're on the show.
I can show you. I got an email at about 11:50, I think. Mm-hmm. So 15 minutes after you finished the press conference.
Okay, so what has been said then?
What has been said is that papers have been prepared, and that.
And where's this coming from? Is it coming from the FAA?
Well, not from the FAA, but from the FA. I don't know where it's coming from. Our reporter, Rob Dawson, is the one who broke out. I don't know where.
You'll understand then until you get the story. Then I can't really comment on it. You know, all I can do is reiterate what I've said in the room for the last hour.
Just drags on.
Yeah, so he's left the press conference doorstep by some journalists, is not loving the attention, does not want to talk about this, and is being told, I think that's Guy Harvard of Sky Sports, that papers are being arranged, and he's had an email. Obviously, Guy doesn't know exactly where that's coming from. He's been emailed by a colleague with the news. Obviously, the colleague knew Guy was at the press conference, said, put this to Martin. Mm. It's quite undignified and far from ideal that O'Neill is being ambushed with this information. It almost seems like the journalists now know more than he knows, which is a pity. This is all blowing one way,
you know,
it just is. I mean, whether it happens today or in a few weeks' time, it's blowing one way.
You said it earlier, it just seems like it's going to be a matter of time, which is so unfortunate.
I think Gareth Southgate, by the way, has been fair enough in the whole thing, and he's made a point of not promising Declan Rice, first-team footballer, that he'll be accelerated through the ranks. He's tried to stay away, effectively not bribe the guy into declaring Freeman. Like, Southgate's handled the thing, it seems, publicly as well as he can. It just seems Rice's mind is made up.
Yeah, it's hard to gauge. Like, there's a tweet that Declan Rice has liked. Martin O'Neill spoken to Declan Rice and the family, and they want a little bit more time to make up his mind, basically. And he's liked that tweet.
It also says he hasn't made a decision yet, and Rice has liked that tweet. Then, if some journalist has papers that have been arranged, I mean.
Like, if you wanted just time to make up a decision on which route you're going, I think he's had enough. Yeah. I think he's had enough. The way he's been playing in the Premier League, even in the last few weeks, doesn't help our cause.
No.
I think his mind is made up.
So would I. And maybe liking those tweets and keeping everyone second guessing, like liking a tweet. I mean,
where are we, by the way?
Just come out and clarify the situation. You know what I mean? Like liking a tweet and sending, you know, it's we're back to Jack Grealish putting up tricolour flags and we're trying to read into what that means. He probably just needs to come out now, Rice, so the people around him need to say, as you said, there is a point here where even if you're going to go back to Ireland, you don't want to do too much damage here and let this drag on. Like, just come out and clarify the situation. Martin O'Neill doesn't appreciate being doorstepped, in fairness, after a press conference.
Well, I don't
like
think
that.
That's fair particularly. He's done his piece, he said it. What more? You know, these aren't confirmed reports either. It's thrown at him.
Look, I understand the journalists want to get to the bottom of the story. It's a huge story. And actually, ideally, Rice would have made up his mind in the last few weeks. Or at least come out and say, do you know what, everybody? I'm not making up my mind for a year. Whatever. Or I'm waiting until the end of the season. But we have like this ticking clock. Is today the day Rice comes out and clarifies the situation? And it just makes everyone look a bit silly.
Sad, really.
Yeah. And also, again,
we need him.
Well, geez, we need him. I mean, for the next 15 years, we need him. But at this point, it's very hard to even imagine him saying, I pick Ireland. I hope I'm wrong, but nothing so far suggests it, does it?
You're draining me here, John. It's not positive, is it?
No. But then again, he liked Martin O'Neill's tweets and he hasn't made up his mind yet. So does that mean he hasn't made up his mind yet?
I don't think Martin O'Neill was responsible for that tweet somehow off that Nokia phone.
Okay, the FAI tweet. But so does that mean Rice is saying, yes, I haven't made up my mind yet?
Oh, no, I don't know. My head's melted with a job. I wish we had more time, but we don't. That's our lot for this week. Joe, thanks for coming in.
Cheers, really Pete. Pleasure. Enjoyed it,
always. Yeah. Sorry, we will be back next week where, of course, we will be previewing in more detail the Denmark game on the Saturday and then obviously the Wales game on the Tuesday. You can download all the usual platforms. Until then, take care. All the best.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.